Support for the Memory Palace comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting your time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/memory. That's odoo.com/memory. Odoo, modern management made simple.
This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. There were canals on Mars. It was right there in the papers in 1882. An astronomer, an Italian like Galileo, Giovanni Schiaparelli, had seen them from an observatory in a palace on a hill in Milan. Had observed bands of shadow, crisscrossing the belly of the red planet, and made detailed notes for 2 years, waiting until the planet's orbit brought it as close as it would be to this one, until he was sure. There was a network of canali, he wrote in Italian, unlike anything seen on Earth. And it was to the people gathered around newsstands in New York or Sydney, to the scientists at symposia at Harvard or Madras, it was the best evidence humanity had ever had that they were not alone. It was a big news day. Percival Lowell was a businessman and a diplomat and an academic who'd spent years of his life obsessively studying and writing about Japan. But with news of Schiaparelli's discovery, Lowell dropped Japan for a country further still. He built a telescope, then the finest in the world, and placed it on a mountain in Flagstaff, Arizona, a place of few clouds or smokestacks or city lights or other things that tend to keep the stars from us. He was no dilettante, despite the sudden midlife career switch. He was smart and assiduous and thorough in his investigations. And by 1894, he was making a detailed study of Mars, tracking atmospheric changes and charting the monumental canals that traced its surface. Others eschewed such precision. Religious scholars pondered the Martian soul. Poets and painters and novelists ran with the news of the Martian canals. Because what news it was. Another world out there. And so they sent humans to explore that world, to see its great cities with their golden domes and green-skinned damsels. Or they brought Martians to this one to blow it up. Meanwhile, Lowell was at work watching Mars, discovering two of its moons, mapping its geography, and naming its landmarks, with the world following it all in the papers, reading on the train, talking to the pharmacist, the boot black, the guy next to them at the mill, thrilling with every new observation and extrapolation, wondering about the composition of those canals, so much bigger than anything on Earth. Were they waterways? Certainly not rivers, not naturally occurring. Were they irrigation systems feeding vast fields that lay between them? Some astronomers argued that the canals were like the Mayan pyramids or Stonehenge, that they were the remnants of an ancient civilization, and maybe an object lesson on hubris for our rapidly industrializing planet. But Lowell put that theory to rest when he observed new branches in the network of canals and shifts in color in the fields between them. Things that suggested life, being lived right there, right then. He discovered a new set of canals, running in parallel to some of Schiaparelli's canali, maybe 100 miles between them. They'd appear and then disappear, suggesting some sort of seasonal construction. He could only guess the purpose of these new canals, but they were marvelous. Just think what it would take to make something and then tear it down. Something that was so massive, running for thousands of miles, and do it all so quickly. It spoke of a civilization far more sophisticated than ours, with some sort of public works apparatus that put our municipal bureaucracies to shame. One day, people came home from work, to read in the paper, to tell their spouse and their kids, to shout across the fence in the yard to their neighbor as they took in the wash. About one of the seas on Mars, they knew it by name. The Erythraeum Sea. Erythraeum. Say it. and there was a name. It had come from Herodotus, the Greek historian, who used it for the distant waters, unseen and unknown, from which the Phoenicians had come long ago. Long before long ago. One day Lowell had seen through his telescope that the Erythraeum Sea had turned from blue to chocolate brown. He struggled to figure out why, until he realized it wasn't a sea at all. It was vegetation. Some crop. Some forest. Some Martian version of autumn in New England. And what a thing that would be to see. What a world out there. One day people read in the papers that Lowell had seen a light, a brilliant projection, he called it, flaring at the edge of the planet. It couldn't be natural, couldn't be a volcano, or some sort of comet. They were signaling us, Lowell said. Mars was trying to contact its neighbor across the way. Maybe the Martians had been doing it for millennia. Maybe they'd just been waiting for us to get our evolutionary act together, to advance far enough as a species to see them. And finally, there in Flagstaff, someone had. But the scientists here on Earth couldn't figure out how to signal back. They tried, but some sort of global semaphore, as one proposed, would require a flag the size of the state of Indiana, and a flagpole that defied the laws of physics. Never mind handling procedures that would outstrip the capacity of even the most industrious Midwestern Boy Scout troop. And so we were stuck. We Earthlings. We couldn't communicate with Mars. We couldn't travel to Mars. So we were left to speculate from afar and wonder about those remarkable beings who had made those canals. Who had evolved on a planet with weaker gravity. Where a person could lift 3 times as much as she could on Earth. Like it was nothing, or could jump across the street in a single bound that felt no less natural, no less casual than a simple step. And maybe that helped explain why the canals were so big. Maybe that's why they went up and down so fast, when the seasons changed, or when nations went to war, or when the fair came to town, or whatever it was that dictated the rhythm of days on a planet 250 million miles away. There were canals on Mars, until there weren't. They started crumbling sometime around 1907, when a chorus of astronomers started questioning Lowell's findings. They didn't question his sincerity. He was a responsible scientist, doing good work. He discovered 2 of the planet's moons, and his observations of the planet left behind a wealth of data and avenues for further exploration for generations of astronomers. He just happened to be wrong. Had been from the jump. In part because he, and most of the rest of the English-speaking scientific community, had misunderstood Schiaparelli. Canali doesn't mean canals. It means furrows, or channels. And there are furrows on Mars, caused, it seems, by some ancient flow of fluid. We send probes and roving robots to sort it out still. But Lowell went looking for canals, so that's what he saw through his telescope. And when he saw those parallel canals, the ones that would appear and then disappear and then reappear, he may have just been seeing things. Some trick of the eye. He may even have been seeing a shadow cast by his own eyelashes. That was in the papers too. And so people went back to the rhythm of days set by earthbound concerns. Elections, train schedules, harvests, work weeks, feedings, closing times, quotas. But there were canals on Mars for a while there. This episode of The Memory Palace was produced by me, Nate DeMeo, with engineering assistance from Kathy Tu, and research assistance from Andrea Milne. This show is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, We receive support from the Knight Foundation, from MailChimp, and from AdZerk, which provides ad-serving technology to PRX. And we get a large proportion of our support from voluntary listener contributions. If you want to help the Memory Palace, there's a great time coming up with our annual Radiotopia pledge drive in mid-October. In the meantime, if you're sitting in front of your computer and you want to help out the podcast, you can make sure you're subscribed on iTunes. You can take a second to write a review there. Those things help a lot. And before I go, I want to encourage you to check out a couple of shows here on Radiotopia, which have both just returned with new seasons of new episodes. These are the paragons, the platonic ideals of radio production. I'm talking about The Truth, and I'm both speaking the truth, and I'm talking about a show called The Truth, which is the best short audio fiction on the planet. Wonderful stories, wonderfully produced. And about love and radio, the groundbreaking show that tells true stories about people living lives you literally don't hear about on any other program. If you love audio storytelling, and I suspect you might, you owe it to yourself to check out both of these shows. And as they are starting their new season, it is a great time to do it. Learn more about The Truth and about love and radio and all of the other top-shelf, best-in-show, independent shows on the Radiotopia Network at radiotopia.fm. Thanks, as always, for listening. Talk to you again.
Radiotopia.